and submit to his teaching than in previous years. I don't think John had to demonstrate to anyone that he had more and better and bigger and flashier programs this year than last year. Because John's message, John's words, were not really calculated to exactly appeal to a crowd. John said to the crowds that came out to be baptized by him, "You brood of vipers!" It's kind of a winning message, isn't it? Y'all want to come, eh? Come back next Sunday, see what I'll call you. "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bear fruits worthy of repentance. Do not begin to say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our ancestor.' For I tell you, God is able from these stones to raise up children to Abraham. Even now, the axe is lying at the root of the trees. Every tree, therefore, that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire." And then a little bit later, speaking about the Messiah, just in case you missed the point, John declares, "His winnowing fork is in his hand to clear his threshing floor and to gather the wheat into his granary, but the chaff he will burn with unquenchable fire." And then Luke, the gospel writer, concludes all this happy sentiment by saying, "So, with many other exhortations, John proclaimed the good news to the people." You're going, "Excuse me? The good what?" Well, part of that was good news. And it makes you kind of wonder why it is that Luke says crowds came out to be baptized by John and to hear his teaching. I'm not going out there. I don't want to hear this guy who calls me a brood of vipers and who tells me about fire coming and me being burned up and an axe at the root of the tree. You want to go? I mean, have you ever seen a Christmas card? "You brood of vipers, Merry Christmas." Like, seriously, where are we going with this? It just doesn't feel. And even more, like, who's going to go out to this guy and say to him, "Well, what then should we do?" Like, really, I don't want to know. I don't want to know what John thinks I should do. I don't want to hear his advice. I don't want to hear his instructions for how I should live. But actually, interestingly, his advice about how to live, if you read it, is not all that fearsome and frightening. Basically, John the Baptist tells those who have come out to hear him, he gives them like just pretty simple advice for how they should live their lives. They should, he says, share. They should share. You can do that. We can all do that. You don't have to be fabulously well. You can share. He tells them that they should be honest. Well, you know, you can do that. You can tell the truth some of the time, maybe even most of the time. He tells them they should be fair in their dealings with other people. It's not that hard to try to be basically fair. He tells them that they shouldn't use whatever power they have for their own advantage. They shouldn't take advantage of other people. Again, you know, it's not that hard. You don't have to be an absolute saint just to not use your power to manipulate other people. He tells them, maybe this one's stretching it a tiny bit, but he tells them that they should be basically content with what they have. Again, you know, it's not climbing Mount Everest. Just be content with what you have. So his advice, his words, when you actually listen to the advice he gives to those who ask him, what then should we do? It's not desperately difficult. But then, what about the parts where he says, even now, the axe is lying at the root of the trees. Every tree, therefore, that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Or when he's speaking of the Messiah, who he awaits, his winnowing fork is in his hand to clear his threshing floor and to gather the wheat into his granary, but the chaff he will burn with unquenchable fire. That sounds just a tiny bit more fearsome, it seems to me, a tiny bit more intimidating. But I don't know. I had someone took me out for coffee last week, and they don't associate with any church, but they're a kind of a really quite profoundly spiritual person. And they wanted to know, I'm not sure why they thought I'd know, but they wanted to know what it is that I think, is the unique and particular spiritual illness of our current culture. How's that for a question? And I said, well, you know, many years ago, Mother Teresa said it was loneliness, that loneliness was the spiritual malaise of our culture. But then I said, and I had thought about it, he kind of warned me ahead of time that he was going to ask me this question, so I sort of thought about it a bit. And I said, you know what? I think the unique and special and particular spiritual ailment of our culture, wait for it, is clutter. Isn't that weird? But think about it, clutter. As I was going to this meeting, I was on my bike, and I went by a bus stop, and there were 8 people at the bus stop, and they were all standing looking at the sky and the trees and the cars going by. They were all standing there with their cell phones right here, every one of them, doing stuff, texting, looking at the internet. Every one of them. You know, you could have asked them 15 minutes later how many people were at the bus stop. They would have said, people? Were there people at the bus stop? Well, I never saw any of them. And the reality is that every second of our lives is filled with something. Clutter isn't just about having too much physical, material stuff. Clutter is about never having a moment of stillness or silence that allows you or causes you to have to face yourself. Clutter is about so filling our lives that there is never a moment of space. We go for a walk in creation, we go for a walk out in nature, and what do we have in our ears? I don't know what all those people are listening to, but it's clutter. It's something. It's not the birds. It's not the wind blowing in the trees. They are distracting themselves with stuff coming from their, whatever those little things are, their phone or their iPod or whatever. It's clutter. It's filling our lives. And so we need an axe and a winnowing fork. Even now, the axe is lying at the root of the trees, and every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. His winnowing fork is in his hand to clear his threshing floor and to gather the wheat into his granary, but the chaff, whew, he will blow away with unquenchable fire. All those iPhones just whew, flying away in the wind. Isn't that great? I can't wait. Bring it on. Where's my iPhone? It's in my pocket. Everything. All that fluff. It's all going to blow away. And this is important because if we are going to follow even the very minimal standard that John the Baptist lays down, If we are going to live a life in which we share, if we are going to live a life that is honest and fair, if we are going to resist the temptation to use our power to manipulate others to get our way, if we are going to find ourselves in a place where we are able to begin even to be content with life as it is, you know what? There are things we're going to have to let go of. Things we are going to have to submit to the axe and the winnowing fork. Things we are going to have to surrender. We're coming to Christmas. You may have noticed that. Christmas, we prepare for by remembering, you should, when you go downstairs after the service this morning, you should pause for a moment in the stairwell and look at the pictures that Jillian put up of the Annunciation. There's all kinds of beautiful depictions of the extraordinary scene between the angel and Mary. None of them comes close to the scene we had here last night between the angel and Mary, which was luminous and beautiful in our pageant. But you get the point. And the point was so beautifully illustrated last night when Bronwyn starts out listening to this little angel who's flapping her wings. And Bronwyn's going, "No way, what are you talking about? Get out of my life. I'm not going there. That's not happening." And then all of a sudden, something inside her shifts. And she goes, "Okay." And that's where we need to get. It's not a shrug of resignation. It's a gesture of abandonment. It's a gesture of letting go. A gesture of surrender. A gesture of putting down our need for everything in life to be equal, which makes it possible for us to begin to share and to be more fair. It's a putting down of our need to make a point or to prove how fine we are or to make a big impression. And so it's the beginning of being able to be honest. It's a putting down of our need for our lives to unfold a certain way and to fulfill our sense of need, want, demand and desire. And so it's the beginning of our ability to stop using our power for our own advantage. And it's the beginning of the possibility that we might find within ourselves that place of peace and contentment that is actually what we're looking for far more than anything else. And I don't know what E.E. Cummings was thinking when he wrote "Let It Go, The," but it's an amazing poem. It's an amazing Christmas poem, an amazing Annunciation poem. But it's kind of hard to read because it's E.E. Cummings and everything sort of goes a little bit skewy. But let me try. Just listen. "Let it go, the smashed, broken word. Broken open vow or the oath cracked lengthwise, let it go. It was sworn to go. Let them go, the truthful liars and the false fair friends and the boasts and neithers. You must let them go. They were born to go. Let all go, the big, small, middling, tall, bigger, really, the biggest, and all things. Let all go, dear. So comes love." See, when we let it all go, we don't get nothing. What we get is who we truly are. we get the essence of our true nature, which is, in fact, what we see born in the person of Jesus. When you look at Jesus, you're intended to see who you are. You're intended to behold your true nature. And when you behold that truth of your nature, all you can do is what we were doing a moment ago, is go glory, glory, glory. Because who you truly are is what we saw in that pageant last night, and when I went up and down carrying baby Jesus. And something stirred in that room. And when Diane Pansel got up and sang, what did she sing? Oh, Holy Night. And it tingled and crackled in the air. It really did. I'm not making that up. That's who you are. That's the reality of human existence. That's the light and love and beauty into which we were born. You don't have to create it. You don't have to go get it. You don't have to find it. You don't have to look for it. You don't have to manufacture it. You don't have to be good enough for it. All you need to do, all any of us needs to do, is what we'll do in a moment. Come forward and put your hands out in an action of surrender and supplication. And it's given. It's there, at the core of our being, this power and presence of love. Let all go, the big, small, middling, tall, bigger, really, the biggest, and all things. Let all go, dear. So comes love.